Thank you all for joining us this morning. I'm going to talk about an analysis that we did with our partners at the California Family Health Council to answer this question: are patients filling chlamydia treatment prescriptions? And I'd like to start by acknowledging the big team of people that it took to collect and analyze and report on this data, so all of the co-authors that are listed here. So first, a little bit of background. We all know by this point that chlamydia is the most commonly reported sexually transmitted infection in the United States, and that most chlamydia infections are, in fact, asymptomatic. There are two recommended treatment regimens for uncomplicated chlamydial infection. The first is a single dose of azithromycin taken orally. And so this can be given as directly observed therapy, where a provider gives it to a patient in a clinic setting if that's offered in that clinic. And the second is a 7-day course of doxycycline. So chart review is really the standard method for assessing chlamydia treatment rate. However, there's evidence to suggest that for medication in general, not just chlamydia treatment, there are some issues with adherence that wouldn't be captured in that chart review process. And there are a few studies that look at the rates of not filling prescriptions in primary care settings, and it ranges anywhere from 5% up to 28%. So why don't patients fill prescriptions? There are a number of reasons. Some of them listed in the literature are included here. And I think especially important for chlamydia might be the second: low perceived severity of diagnosis, especially since the infections are often asymptomatic. But I'm sure this list is not exhaustive. So our study had two main objectives. The first was to assess how prescribing chlamydia medication impacts the treatment rate in a sample of California clinics. And the second was to examine differences in prescription fill rates by patient demographics and clinic type. So to do this, we collected chlamydia test and treatment information from 85 Title X clinics from January 2008 through March 2013. And Title X is a federal block grant program to support clinics that provide comprehensive reproductive health services to low-income and uninsured individuals. And in California, we have a really robust Title X network. There are over 300 clinics throughout the state. And so each clinic was asked to select 10 to 15 chlamydia-positive client records from the prior 6 months. And all clients had to be enrolled in the Family PAC program, which in California is our fee-for-service reimbursement program for sexual health services, which includes STD testing and STD treatment. And it's for low-income and uninsured individuals as well. So because of the overlap in those populations, the majority of clients that are attending Title X clinics are actually enrolled in Family PAC. So we collected chlamydia test date, and treatment method, and categorized treatment method in one of three ways: either on-site, if there was chart documentation that the client had been treated by the provider during the clinic visit, so this was considered 100% treated; prescription, if the client received a prescription for treatment and there was chart documentation of that; and then missing, if there was no documented treatment date or method. So then we looked at those that had been treated via prescription, and we attempted to match all clients to a treatment-associated billing claim. We reviewed all paid and denied claims within 90 days of the test date, and we use national drug code numbers to search for receipt of treatment. So NDC numbers are assigned by the FDA to each drug product that's available on the market, and that's captured in the billing claim, so we were able to look for that. And so we included any NDC number that had the word azithromycin or doxycycline in the generic drug name, and this amounted to 633 different codes. So you can imagine this is inclusive of, but not exclusive to, chlamydia treatment. It's possible we were catching some other things in this match. We then stratified the results by client age, race and ethnicity, gender, and the type of clinic visited. So here's our study sample. We started with 917 chlamydia-positive clients in the chart review. We were unable to match 73 to a Family PAC ID number, which left us with 844. There were a few clients that had more than one chlamydia-positive test in the study period, and so in that case, we only kept the first chlamydia-positive test. And then we also excluded anyone without a test date or with incomplete treatment information. And that left us with 790 eligible clients. And you can see here how that breaks out by treatment method. So using kind of the standard chart review process, we would estimate that in this sample, clients were 98% treated. However, the question we're asking here is what proportion of those prescriptions matched to a billing claim, which would suggest that they went to the pharmacy and picked up their prescription. So in the pie chart, you can again see how the clients break out by treatment method. And then on the right, the bar shows what proportion of those matched to a billing claim. So 67% matched, suggesting they had picked up treatment, while 33% did not have a matching billing claim, which would tell us that approximately a third of our sample did not fill their prescription. So if we recalculate that treatment rate, accounting for the fact that only 67% of prescriptions matched, we have a verified treatment rate of 87%. We looked by client demographics. We didn't see any difference in the rate of filling prescription by gender or by race and ethnicity, but we did see a difference by age. So clients aged 18 and younger were less likely to have a matching billing claim for their prescription than were clients aged 19 and older. We also looked at this by clinic type. So there were 8 different clinic types in our data set, and local health departments only had 5 individual chlamydia-positive clients treated via prescription, so it really wasn't enough to compare it to the other clinical settings that were prescribing treatment. And then these 4 clinical settings were actually treating 100% of their clients on site. So we focused in on the 2 at the bottom, standalone family planning clinics and federally qualified health centers, which in this analysis included FQHC lookalikes. And so you can just see here the proportion of clients treated via prescription at the 2 at those 2 settings. It was just over 50% at standalone family planning clinics and just under 50% at FQHCs. So again, in the overall sample, 33% of clients that were treated via prescription did not match to a billing claim, and this was different by clinic type. So 22% of prescription clients at standalone family planning clinics did not fill their prescription, and 37% at federally qualified health centers. So just to summarize, chart reviews may overestimate true treatment rates, and billing claims might be a helpful tool for helping to assess prescription fill rates. In this sample, we did see a difference by age in the rate of filling prescription, with clients aged 18 and younger being less likely to fill their prescription. And prescription fill rates were also lower at FQHCs than at standalone family planning clinics. A few considerations and limitations of this data. First, as I mentioned, data are from a systematic sample of chlamydia-positive clients. But this was not a random sample from all Title X clinics in California, so that may impact generalizability. There are a few scenarios where treatment may have been received but not captured in this analysis. Given that our data sources are serving low-income and uninsured individuals, I think it's unlikely that this significantly impacted the analysis. But nonetheless, it's possible that clients might have elected to pay out of pocket, that they might have had some other insurance mechanism to fill their prescription, or that if they were a prescription client that was maybe called in via phone, that they might have come back to clinic at another time and reported they hadn't filled that prescription and instead received on-site treatment. And then finally, I mentioned that on-site dispense patients were considered 100% treated in this analysis because of the chart documentation. However, not all on-site patients match to a treatment claim. We know that clinics have really varied billing systems and procedures for billing, and it's not uncommon to hear that there are procedures provided in the clinic that are not billed for. This is in contrast to pharmacies that really have robust billing systems and ensure that they're going to receive reimbursement for the medications they provide really before they even give it to the client. So finally, implications. Kind of the key public health question here, right, is how can we improve chlamydia treatment rates and how can we ensure that those clients that we identify as positive really actually get the treatment that they need? And I think one clear answer for many clinics could be on-site dispensing of treatment. In California, we're working on an on-site dispensing toolkit to really walk clinics through the process of applying for the license and staying in compliance with state laws. And on the right, you can see screenshots of a couple other examples of this, one from Colorado and one from New York State as well, that are trying to help clinics with that process. And then I also wanted to mention the 340B drug pricing program, which is a federal program administered by HRSA to provide discounted medications to certain types of clinics. FQHCs and Title X clinics are eligible, as are STD clinics. And so this has been a tool that has helped some clinics be able to feasibly provide on-site medication. Another idea here is, especially if you can't do on-site dispensing in your clinic, is knowing that some patients don't fill their prescriptions to really ensure that patient counseling messages emphasize the importance of picking up treatment, even if you're not experiencing symptoms, and the importance of doing that as quickly as possible. And then finally, this is not my area of expertise, but I know that there's a lot of thought that electronic health records can play a role in helping either providers remember that to check in with their patients about whether treatment was received, or possibly even at some point linking to pharmacies and providing some kind of indication to the clinic if the prescription's never filled. So with that, I am happy to take any questions. Thank you. Please.
Very interesting. Ned Hook from Birmingham, Alabama. Two questions for you. First one, and I'll ask them both and then listen for your response. Many of the EMRs have electronic prescription, e-prescriptions as well. And in my experience, sometimes the patients don't know that they've had an e-prescription given. So I wondered if you evaluated whether or not e-prescriptions were used. My second question is, did any of your the patients in this study, and I do think it's really a terribly important area, also have gonorrhea? The reason I ask that is I have this recollection of a study out of Memphis about 15 years ago, which showed that when women had PID and received an injection and a prescription, they often did not fill the prescription and follow up. So, but again, this is a very important avenue of work, and I congratulate you and your colleagues.
Thank you. So to the first question, there's actually a fair amount of follow-up that we want to do with the clinics in this sample. We have some information clinic by clinic about which ones had different rates of filling prescriptions and that sort of thing. So e-prescribing is something we'll certainly ask when we follow up with clinics. I'm not sure right now what proportion of them were offering their prescriptions via e-prescription versus, kind of written or calling it in. And then the second question... gonorrhea, yeah. So 90% of the clients in the study were treated with azithromycin, and only 5% of those had dual treatment. So there was some, definitely some clients that had, indications for both chlamydia and gonorrhea, but we didn't pull that from the chart review. We only looked at chlamydia at that point. So it'd be another thing to look at, for sure.
Hi, Tom Peterman, CDC Atlanta. Thanks for a great talk. I'm wondering if... you plan on continuing to do this over time. And also, could you tell us how much work is involved in getting that and how much additional work it would be to also validate this by calling the patient and asking them, did you ever pick up your prescription and take it?
So we're really fortunate in this study. We were able to integrate the chart review into the regular site visits that Title 10 was doing anyways in California. So they were going to these clinics and they were pulling charts and collecting a number of different indicators for their Title 10 program. And so they're able to integrate this into that. So a fair amount of time to collect the data, but it was actually integrated into a process that was already happening in terms of that. We also are really lucky in California. We have somebody that sits at our health department that's has a dual appointment with us and with the Family Pact folks. And so that person had access to the Family Pact billing records and was familiar with that system already. So the matching process was certainly not easy, but it was somebody who already had that expertise in-house that was able to do that matching. I think now that we have kind of the codes that we use and the things that we look for and the system in place, I'm sure we'd be happy to share that with others if they had that ability to match billing claims to their other records. But we did have two people that were already in-house experts kind of at this particular data set. So that expertise was there. And the data sharing agreements were already there. I think it's something we should talk about, whether or not we continue to collect the data. I mean, as I said, this is part of a regular process, so I'm not sure that it's collecting a huge amount of extra data to continue. And actually, at one point, we thought we would only go for far less than the study period we actually went for, and then we thought, we might as well make it an even more robust sample. Let's just keep collecting it for a little while longer to see if we can get a bigger sample size. So it's possible we could keep going with it, yeah. Just talk about that.
We don't have time for more questions.
And what about calling the patient?
Oh, about calling them. I don't know. We could target it. I mean, we could just look at those prescription clients, and we could maybe look at some of the clinics that are just prescribing and start there. There were 260 prescription clients, so we'd have to get permission from the clinic to give them a call and follow up. But if we integrated that early on, then maybe we could get permission to do that. That's a great point. Thank you.